Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Under the Hoodies. I am Bill Kegel. He is Brian Shipley. Brian, how are you, buddy?
Not bad, Bill. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good, man. I am good. You know, unfortunately, you know, kind of doing the show, at least I am, with a heavy heart because of Robin Williams' untimely passing yesterday. Not a fan of all of his work, but, you know, my childhood was just slightly better with Robin Williams in it. So I just wanted to say my piece on that real quick because, like I said, that guy, he was a part of my childhood. And, you know, a little bit was sad. So,
what was your favorite Robin Williams movie?
As a child, this is a layup. This is Mrs. Doubtfire. But as an adult, it's a little tough. Wait, what's yours? I'm curious yours because I think Mrs. Doubtfire even still today might be mine.
As a child and still as an adult, it was one of my favorite movies as a kid. With Honors, where he plays like a homeless guy. Brendan Fraser's in it.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, Brendan Fraser's out at Harvard, and you know, Robin Williams, the homeless guy, kind of becomes like a mentor to him. I haven't seen the movie in years, so I might be butchering the plot a little bit, but for whatever reason, I love that movie, so I'd probably have to go with that.
All right. No, I haven't seen that one, but let me tell you, my wife's been devastated because she announced this years ago, and I actually forgot. She said she's going to be devastated the day that Robin Williams dies. And I think that was like around the time he was like, you know, there's news of him entering rehab or whatever. So yeah, man, like I said, rarely do I get upset, you know, when people I don't know pass, you know, other than the obvious, oh, that's really disappointing, you know, somebody passed. But when it's a celebrity and somebody I've never met, man, it was weird. It was just weird. Just because my childhood was just slightly better with Robin Williams in it. I think we lost a legend, man. So anyway, let's get into sports. Today we're going to be breaking down the NFC West and the NFC North. And Brian, let's just get to it, man. First team, Seattle Seahawks. Been reports of Marshawn Lynch, you know, which I think came out actually as being false, of falsely accused of vandalism and all kinds of other nonsense. But even with the Marshawn Lynch quote unquote distraction, you know, with his holdout and them giving him $5 million extra bucks, do you think this team is a repeat candidate? We've not had good luck with teams repeating over the last, I would say even maybe the last 15 years. It's no real quote unquote dynasty. The Patriots probably the closest in the early 2000s, but where do you see? Do you think Seattle's a team that could repeat this year?
Yeah, I could see them repeating, but I also wouldn't. You know, they wouldn't be my favorite, I don't think, heading into the season. I think that, you know, last year they might have overachieved a little bit, but you know, it's hard to argue with that defense. You know, Pete Carroll really seems to have a nice formula as far as the deep defensive line rotation with a lot of different. Guys that can do different things, you know, your speed rushers like Cliff Averill, you know, your space eaters, you know, with the big defensive tackles they have out there. You know, Michael Bennett, a guy that you can move all up and down the line. And then they pair that with big physical corners that can press at the line of scrimmage and disrupt timing. And, you know, by the time the receiver gets farther in the route, one of those big defensive linemen are breathing down the quarterback's neck. And then, of course, you know, maybe the best, defensive player in football, and Earl Thomas, on the back end helping to cover up any mistakes that do happen. And then, you know, Cam Chancellor as well, another dynamic safety that really kind of gives an intimidating presence back there. And I'm sure slot receivers hate going across the middle when they see a man that looks like a linebacker and runs like a corner ahead of their way. So, yeah, I think the defense is awesome. And when you have a defense, a good running game, which they certainly do, and you have a quarterback that's smart, doesn't turn the ball over, and can make some big plays on third down, you know, that's a recipe of a team that can go deep in the playoffs. And I also don't think you can discount the fact that even though I think a lot of the noise is artificially enhanced, I mean, there might not be a better home field advantage in the NFL right now than in Seattle. So I feel like, you know, if they have a good season and get home field advantage again in the playoffs, you know, they're going to be a tough out. But guess it's a long-winded way of saying that I certainly wouldn't be surprised if they repeat, but I don't think that they're, you know, some great dynasty in the making team. I just think they're above average they're pretty good in an era where there's really no great elite team. So they're just one of many I could see hoisting the Lombardi at the end of the season.
Right, and I think this year, I think their schedule looks a little brutal this year. I mean, first week of the year, I'll just name their teams that they play. First 8 weeks. They have Green Bay, San Diego, Denver at home. They're going to be at home against Denver. Denver's the away team. Sorry, I think I said that wrong. At Washington, home against Dallas, at St. Louis, at Carolina, and then the Raiders at home, so they don't really make a difference. But they play the Giants at home. They play at Kansas City. I mean, they play their division, obviously, and then they have the NFC. It looks like they have the NFC East and the AFC West. So, obviously, they have a couple, walkovers like the Raiders. But then again, they have kind of a tough schedule. They have kind of one of the harder schedules I've seen in a while. So I'm curious if that's going to sort of wear on them. You know, there's the quote-unquote Super Bowl hangover. I don't know. I think you put it best. I mean, I wouldn't put my money on them if I was betting an NFC champion this year. I don't think I would put it on Seattle. But I mean, everything you touched on is spot on. Other question I have for you. Controversial opinion here, but in my opinion, I think Richard Sherman might be a tad overrated. There was a stat or something that I read about a week ago saying that he played the left side of the field 98% of the time last season, not necessarily covering the team's best receivers, so maybe his coverage numbers were a little inflated. What do you think about that? I know you've had opinions on Sherman in the past. I mean, considering, you know, the contract he got and how he played in the playoffs where do you fall on Sherman? Where do you think he's, you know, one of the three best corners in the league?
Well, you know, his play has grown on me because I was a little bit too far out a year ago, right? I didn't even think he was a top 20 corner. I just thought that, you know, like I conveyed earlier, he plays really in a perfect system for
right.
a corner like himself because he's big, he's physical at the line of scrimmage, and you know that Pete Carroll is going to find a way to get pressure with his defensive line. So I feel like he's a guy like Darrelle Revis that you could play on anywhere on any team, and as long as you tell him that, you know, play man-to-man, do your thing, and leave him on an island, he's going to be really good. And I feel like, you know, Pat Peterson's kind of the same way at this stage in his career, too. And I don't know if Sherman's that guy. I think in the right system that highlights his strengths, which, you know, hopefully that's what systems are going to do for a player, I do think
right.
he can be really good. But I think the biggest reason I've changed my opinion on him is, you know, I've seen some things where he really is just an avid watcher of game film and really studies what receivers that he's going to be going up against do on a week-to-week basis. And, you know, I do respect that. I think that guy practices his tail off, really looks to try to gain an edge every week watching film. And, you know, like that one great play they had last year where he tipped the ball. Either he tipped it or somebody tipped it to him and they had an interception. And, you know, I had seen something on the NFL Network where they do practice that. I mean, they do practice that in practice as far as, you know, there's a jump ball to the sideline. Instead of letting it go out, one DB tips it to another, and he's able to do it. And, you know, I think the guy just has some terrific body control. He's terrific at, if he gets beat, you know, never getting too far out of position. And I also think he's sort of like a Syracuse basketball defender, that he's so long that he can get beat by a step, but he's got such long arms he can make up for it. Whereas a guy maybe like, Brandon Flowers, a 5'8" corner, you know, if you give that receiver the same amount of space, he's not going to be able to make up for it with his athleticism and long limbs. So, you know, all in all, I'd say, you know, I'm willing to say he's a top 10 corner at this point, but I just personally don't think he's top three. I just think that he's in the right system. And you know what? That's not something you should knock against him. I mean, Tom Brady's in the perfect system for his strength. You know, Terrell Davis back in the day was in the perfect system for his strength. You know, and they're just maximizing and taking advantage of their opportunity.
Right, and yeah, I agree with you, and I think you're referring to the Crabtree thing. I think Sherman tipped the ball and Earl Thomas intercepted it and was able to keep both feet in bounds. That's when he you know, slapped him on the butt and then called him the mediocre, which, you know, we're going to get into the 49ers in a second. I actually sort of agree with Richard Sherman about Michael Crabtree being mediocre, but that's, you know, like I said, that's my opinion. But, yeah, I don't put him in a class with Patrick Peterson. Patrick Peterson is a little different, and I'm only comparing him because of the contracts and, the, you know, there's the Twitter beef or whatever. Patrick Peterson is a little different because he's an incredible returner. Like, he's a great special teams player, aside from being, you know, before transforming into a lockdown corner. I mean, I think that guy is the future of defensive back. At least as far as corners go. I mean, I think Earl Thomas we would call the best safety in the league right now. I mean, I think Patrick Peterson, in 2 years, we're going to talk about him being the best cornerback in the league. I'm probably going to take his return duties as his job on the defense gets a little bigger. But, you know, I just think that guy's a lot more versatile. He's almost as big as Sherman. So, you know, bringing it back to your point about the long arms, if he gets beat, I think Patrick Peterson is more athletic and has that length. I think he's going to be the best corner in the league, you know, for you know, 5 to 7 years here after Darrelle Revis decides he's done doing it. So, all right. So we don't think Seattle's going to repeat. I mean, you know, $1,000 on it. We wouldn't bet it on Seattle repeating.
That's right. No way.
Nope. Same here. All right, now my team to come out of the this is my pick to come out of the NFC, San Francisco 49ers. Colin Kaepernick, you know, didn't really throw the ball a ton. He was kind of he wasn't really unleashed last year. I know this better than most because I drafted him pretty early on in my fantasy draft, and outside of that first game against the Packers, he was kind of a disappointment fantasy wise. But I mean, still doing what he's asked, and I think, you know, if you're running the 49ers, you don't want him doing. You know, you don't want him throwing the ball over the field, at least not at that point in his career. Maybe this year they're going to kind of open it up and let him throw, and he definitely has better weapons to do that with. I mean, with the acquisition of Stevie Johnson, obviously Vernon Davis, you know, like I said, the mediocre Crabtree, Bolden. I just think, Carlos Hyde, they drafted out of Ohio State. You know, kind of adding another dimension to that running back core, and a devastating injury. You and I both were, you know, a little upset by Kendall Hunter again, the poor guy out for the season. So that kind of hurts their stable of running backs. But I mean, they just find a way to kind of always plug guys in and you know, help Frank Gore carry the load. And plus, their defense is, you know, one of the better defenses in the league. Obviously, they're not going to have Navarro Bowman, I don't think, for maybe week six. But where do you see them this year, Brian? Are they a legit Super Bowl contender, obviously. Do you have them coming out of the NFC, or would you go in another direction?
I'd go in another direction on the NFC, but I do agree with you that I think that's going to be the team that comes out of the NFC West. You know, I really love watching the way the 49ers play football and go about their business. I mean, say what you want about Jim Harbaugh. I know he can come off as an abrasive human being at times, but I just really like the way that man coaches his players. I think that sometimes teams get lost where, you know, they're too stuck in their ways and want to play traditional smash-mouth football. You know, we sort of saw with the Jets a few years ago, they wanted to, you know, run, and it didn't really work for them. Or, you know, conversely, teams get too in love with the new age, the next wave of things. And we kind of saw that 1 year with the Dolphins where they wanted to go, you know, wildcat almost full-time with Pat White, and it just didn't work out. And then there's the team like the 49ers that just have the perfect mix and get the best of both worlds, where one play they're lining up with two tight ends, one wide receiver, and a fullback, and you look like you're watching football from 1982, and they're running, you know, halfback power, halfback off tackle, halfback slam, shove it down your throat. You know what's coming, and you're still not going to be able to stop it. But then, four plays later, they're running, you know, spread option, you know, some crazy creative play, and just keeping the defense on their heels, not really sure what's going to go on. So I feel like they have one of the best run-blocking offensive lines in the games. I mean, Micah Potty's an absolute monster inside at guard, former first-round pick. I'm a big Colin Kaepernick believer. You know, I've really liked him since he came out of Nevada. And I think that he'll see a much improved player this year, another year under his belt. And it's easy to forget that at the beginning of last year, I mean, his receiving core was just pretty yeek. I mean, he had Anquan Boldin, and that was about all that was going for him. And, you know, whether you think Michael Crabtree's mediocre or not, that seems to be his guy. That seems to be, you know, every quarterback, especially young quarterbacks, seem to have that security blanket. And Crabtree seems to be that guy for Colin Kaepernick. And I thought once he came back and got his legs under him, Crabtree, that is, later on in the season after coming off that Achilles injury, I thought we kind of saw Kaepernick turn it up a notch. And, you know, between him, Stevie Johnson's now over there, Anquan Boldin, Vernon Davis, and as you mentioned, young running back legs with Kendall Hunter to pair with the ageless Frank Gore. And I think that has a, you know, there's an opportunity for that offense to really take that next step and be at least on par with their defense, which has really been their identity the last few years, that, you know, as a team that no one wants to play against. And over on defense, I mean, if Eldon Smith can keep his mind together, you know, he's one of the premier defensive players in the NFL. Justin Smith is a Hall of Famer in my book. Pat Willis is a Hall of Famer in my book. Poor Navarro Bowman, I really hope he is able to come back and play again this year. You know, all in all, I think that's just a really, really good roster. If I had one question mark, it would be the secondary. You know, I don't really see a shutdown corner there. I do like their first-round pick, Jimmy Ward, safety slash slot corner from Northern Illinois. But, again, I mean, that's a slot back. That's not a guy that's going to be going up against number one wide receivers. And that's asking a lot to entrust the back end of your defense to a rookie, Jimmy Ward, and a second-year player, Eric Reed, no matter how talented they are. So I think that they're that'd probably be their one major weakness, but if the offense scores as much as I think they're going to, then I really don't see it being much of an issue, at least in the regular season.
Right, and just give people a little perspective on the Navarro Bowman loss. Pro Football Focus had Patrick Willis as the third best middle linebacker in the league behind Luke Kuechly and Navarro Bowman. So, I mean, it's high regard as Pat Willis has held, which he is. He's fantastic. I love that guy. Seems to be a good dude off the field, by the way. I have Instagram, and he's on it, and all that guy seems to do is play football, work out, and fish. So, you know, I love that guy. But, yeah, Navarro Bowman, I mean, that guy was coming into his own, and he was, you know, Pat Willis was, you know, the third best middle linebacker in the league. He was even the best middle linebacker on his team. And Alden Smith is, in my opinion, sort of the key to the secondary success, obviously. I mean, you know, your secondary looks a lot better when you're getting pressure on the quarterback and your defensive line and your pass rushers are a lot better if your quarterbacks are really good. So Alden Smith really could, when he comes back from whatever suspension he gets, there, I think a rumor is 6-8 games. I think that'll help, you know, paper over a lot of the problems in the secondary. They're my picks to come out of the NFC this year. I like Harbaugh as a coach. I would absolutely never want to play for him because he seems a little overbearing, and you hear things about him. But at the same time, the guy's super passionate, and all he wants to do is win. But you know, he's kind of a pain in the kind of a pain in the butt employee by all accounts. I know, right. Trent Baalke is, you know, go ahead, sorry.
Right, and with Trent Baalke, I mean, I don't think any team's done a better job in the draft the last few years as far as, you know, stockpiling picks and almost, you know, sort of rigging the system and getting picks for guys that they lose as free agents, trading up, trading down. I mean, it seems like every year they have a dozen picks in the first four rounds, at least the last two or three years. So I think that another, you know, underrated facet of their team is that their depth is really just off the charts. And, you know, that's the type of team that can withstand a few injuries or an Eldon Smith suspension and not skip a beat, which, as we know, you know, the NFL season, sometimes it's just ultimately comes down to survival of the fittest and which team is most healthy come in or which team has the best depth. So I do think that's a major key to them, and I also think that a lot of NFL teams are going to be anxious to see who they cut at the end of preseason this year, because I think there's going to be a few 49ers that get cut but aren't out of work for too long because that roster is just so deep and hard to make right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I just don't see a scenario, like, unless, you know, some catastrophic happens to where they don't at least win the NFC West. Obviously, Seattle is going to have something to say about that. We have four more teams to talk about in that division, which is probably the best division of football. It definitely was last year. So, like I said, if I'm putting money on it, it's the 49ers. So, all right, let's get to St. Louis, who, you know, drafted Aaron Donald as a Giants fan. So, you know, slightly upset about that. But, you know, hopefully Odell Beckham turns out to be the next best-case scenario, or worst-case scenario, next Ike Hilliard. Best-case scenario, let's hope he turns out to be the next different player, but Amani Toomer. So, as far as Giants wide receivers go, Plaxico Burress, I would love to say, but that guy is just a, you know, the guy is kind of on a level of his own as far as in this Giants fan's humble opinion. But, St. Louis's pass rush is going to be absolutely incredible. They led the league last year in sacks. They have a really nice linebacking core, and Janoris Jenkins is another one of those young cornerbacks who could be, you know, I don't know if he's ever going to be a Darrell Revis, you know, type lockdown corner, but he's definitely going to be one of the better corners in the league for the next, you know, let's say 8 years. And like I said, the defensive line, Robert Quinn was out of his mind last year. You know, Chris Long is a beast. Aaron Donald, a beast. I mean, they just it's their offense. I mean, really, they come down to sort of they have the unfortunate draw of being in the NFC West, which is, you know, I don't think it's ever going to be better than it is, you know, right now. But Sam Bradford, man, if that guy can stay upright and can develop into what at least he's paid for, they could, you know, they could be right in the thick of the NFC West. Where do you come down on him?
I think you hit the nail right on the head. To me, it's really the same story as it's been the last few years. They've been my sleeper team the last few years and kind of, you know, disappointed me. And it comes down to Sam Bradford. Is he going to be able to take the next step? Is he going to be able to lead the team to the next level? And, you know, really kind of capitalize on the promise he showed as a rookie when they almost backed their way into the playoffs. I mean, let's not forget, not too long ago, a 7-9 team won what is now the best division in football. Really shows you how quickly things can change. But, you know, he hit the nail right on the head. For this team, it's all about the defense. I mean, that front four, that's four top 15 picks between Quinn, Long, Michael Brockers, and Aaron Donald. And I think at least three out of those four would be a centerpiece on any other defensive line. And, you know, with St. Louis, they're just another guy.
Right.
James Laurinaitis and Ogletree, their first-round pick from a year ago, make a nice, you know, second line of defense as far as the linebacking course concern. And I really like their young safeties. T.J. McDonald was a third-round pick out of USC a few years ago. And, you know, their second-round pick from this past season from the kid from Florida State, LaMarcus Joyner. So, of course, you mentioned Janoris Jenkins. So they have just an unbelievable amount of talent on their defense. And as much as I hate the guy and think he's, you know, sort of a Neanderthal, yet a snitch as well, I think having Greg Williams, a full season defensive coordinator, I mean, look, he's one of my five least favorite people in the NFL right now. But I think it's undeniable that the man can coach defense and maximize the ability of his defense and get a defense that's, you know, heavy hitting regardless of whether there's a cash prize afterwards or not. So I feel like this is going to be a defensive-oriented team that's going to try to run the ball, sort of play old school, Jeff Fisher, you know, Eddie George, Titan, back of the day, Titan-type team where you're running 25 to 30 times a game. And, you know, on offense, we flip it around. And with all the talent that's on that defensive line, there's a heck of a lot of talent on that offensive line, too. I mean, you have Jake Long, a former first overall pick. You have Greg Robinson, who was the second overall pick this year.
Yep.
You know, Roger Saffold was a high pick. I mean, there's a lot of talent over there, which has really been one of their most glaring weaknesses the last few years. But, I mean, I think that's going to be a heck of a run-blocking, you know, line. They have two real dynamite backs. You know, I think Zach Stacy really showed out of Vanderbilt that he was probably undervalued in the draft 2 years ago, and I thought he had an excellent rookie season, really runs hard. You know, kind of reminds me of an Alfred Morris type of back. And then they took Trey Mason, in the third round this year from Auburn. He's the type of guy who can give them that, you know, explosive, dynamic element to go with the Thunderback and Zach Stacy, sort of be the guy that everybody wanted Isaiah Pede to be. And now Pede looks like a questionable guy to even make the roster. And I guess really, like we said, it comes down to whether or not Sam Bradford's ready to take that next step. And quite frankly, as much as people hate on the receiving core, I think there's a heck of a lot of talent there. And if Sam Bradford can't get it done in this situation, then I don't know if he's ever going to be a legitimate NFL quarterback, although I will say with a caveat that Brian Schottenheimer's his offensive coordinator, and I think that's one of the worst offensive coordinators you can have in the NFL. But I'm a big, big, big Chris Givens fan, a former fourth-round pick out of Wake Forest, great deep threat, really, really explosive with the ball in his hands. Kenny Britt's actually been turning heads at training camp. We've talked about him before. I mean, the guy's a dynamite talent with an IQ lower than his number 18 jersey number. Tavon Austin, the top 10 pick from a year ago, they traded up to get. You know, he certainly seems like the type of guy that can be, you know, dynamic on the slot and take some bubble screens and make Sam Bradford's stats look pretty afterwards. And let's not forget about Brian Quick, who has been a disappointment since being drafted with the first pick in the second round a few years ago out of a small school, totally blanking on what it was. But this
Appalachian State.
Appalachian State, right. I mean, this guy's a 6'4", 220-pound big boy who at the very least seems like he could be a nice red zone threat. And then lastly, they have Jared Cook, their big free agent acquisition from a year ago. You know, a nice chain mover, seam stretcher, and another 6'5" big target in the red zone. I think that cachet and arsenal of weapons, you know, if Sam Bradford and Brian Schottenheimer can't get it done with that, I mean, they've just run out of excuses. You can only blame it on the old line and not having enough receiving weapons for so long. I mean, the Rams aggressively patched up all those holes, and at this point it's really, in my opinion, put up or shut up time for both of them.
No, I couldn't agree more, and there's been nothing but good things coming out of camp about Brian Quick and Britt. Apparently Kenny Britt has his head on right. Jeff Fisher, you know, I know Dan sort of turned you on Jeff Fisher a couple weeks ago, but I mean, you know, if nothing else, that guy, very similar to Tom Coughlin, the guy's a leader of men, and he's, I don't know, he seemed to get the best out of Kenny Britt. I mean, that's at least all the reports that I've read out of training camp, and Brian Quick has been looking really good, shorts in the small pad. So I don't know. I think you could do worse than those top four receivers, in Britt, Austin, Quick, and Givens, and you know, obviously Jared Cook. I think he was their leading receiver last year, if I'm not mistaken. So they could be an underrated team. Just unfortunately for them, they're playing in, you know, the best division in football. So do you think they could make the playoffs right now?
Oh, that's tough. I mean,
I would say yes. Yeah.
I mean, I like you said, it's just going to be so tough in that NFC West where you're automatically playing four games against the 49ers and the Seahawks and the Cardinals, who we'll get to in a minute, but – you know, 49ers and Seahawks, I think you would agree with me that if they split that and went 2-2, you know, that would really be an outstanding result for them. But that means,
right,
you know, you're already kind of starting with two losses in the best-case scenario, at least from a realistic point of view. I think it would be tough to make. That's the type of team, you know, we talked about how pathetic the AFC South was a few weeks ago. That's the type of team I would love to see in the AFC South. You know, the battle of luck, and I think they would go 13-3 in that division. I really do. But
I agree.
You know, you do have to take into account schedule and who they have to play in their division. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you take care of your business in the division, you know, more often than not, you're going to make the playoffs. But, man, that is some tall order of business to take care of in that division.
Right, right. And, I'm going to say no, just not because of their talent. I mean, That defensive line is crazy. Michael Brockers is probably the worst player in the defensive line. Aaron Donald, obviously a rookie, but I mean, if you go from a talent standpoint, I think Michael Brockers might be the worst player in that defense, and he would be the best interior lineman in 90% of teams in the league. So, I mean, I feel bad for the guy. I feel bad for the Rams. Just I feel bad for the city of St. Louis because at least they have the Cardinals that have won a few titles recently. But yeah, this team's dynamite, and they're probably not gonna make the playoffs with all that talent. So, all right, we're gonna go to the Arizona Cardinals. Carson Palmer's their starting quarterback. I don't like that, but Bruce Arians seems to at least make us. You know, if you showed me Carson Palmer's yards thrown last year, I'd be like, oh, well, there you go. He's a great quarterback. And then it's like, eh, I also threw 22 interceptions and 24 touchdowns. Not fantastic. This is another team. Really good defense. The ageless wonder, Carlos Dansby, had a really nice season last year. I feel like he's been in the league my whole life. John Abraham's another one. I feel like he's been in the league my whole life. And he's been in the league half my life, and I'm 30. I'm just looking at him right now. He's been in the league for 15 seasons. I feel like I feel significantly older right now. But, I mean, they have, in my opinion, you know, I would probably, off the top of my head, maybe the fourth best cornerback in the league in Patrick Peterson. Really, really sucks they lost a Honey Badger last year because I think he was, I would say running away with Defensive Player of the Year, but he was definitely in the running with Richardson and Alonso. As far as that goes, and he just turned out to be a really great value as a what did he draft in the third round, right?
Third round, yep.
Yeah, that's just a great value for a guy that was, you know, missing his entire season of college, and usually that's not a good thing. But don't tell that to Tyrann Mathieu and Robert Quinn, if I'm not mistaken. I think missed a year of college as well before he got in the league, but. Antonio Cromartie was kind of a shrewd pickup by them. They're good players. I mean, obviously they're going to be without Darryl Richardson with any luck forever, just because he's a terrible person by all accounts, but hell of a football player. So I don't know. This is another team, man. I think if they were in the AFC South, they probably not 13-3, but definitely 11-5, and they went 10-6 last year somehow in that division. It beat Seattle at home, the only team to do it. Albeit on the luckiest catch I've ever seen in my life by Michael Floyd, but who's also been coming along as well. So obviously they have Larry Fitzgerald. So Brian, what do you make of this team? I love getting your opinions on this stuff, and this is a team that I couldn't guess what you thought on them. So where do you fall on them?
Oh, I mean, I thought you laid it out nicely. I think they do have a lot of individual talent. I'm a big Bruce Arians fan. Any older man that can pull off the Kangol hat like that, you got to have some respect for it.
That's a good point. Him and Samuel Jackson, man. They're the only two people I know
Samuel
of that aware of that have not let the Kangol hat go.
No, they haven't. And Arians just seems like such a cool customer. It's almost just shocking to think that he was actually fired by the Steelers as their offensive coordinator and replaced by Todd Haley just, short 2 years ago and was actually – riding off into the sunset into retirement because he was so, disgusted about that after winning Super Bowls with them. And then his buddy Chuck Pagano got the job with Indy and was like, I want you to come with me. And that was the only reason he did. And then obviously, unfortunately, Pagano was diagnosed with cancer. Arians had to take over as the head man, did a heck of a job, and now he finally got, the long, elusive head coaching job of his own. And, I think he's a fantastic coach, and he's sort of like Mark Trestman out of Chicago, like we were talking about, as far as being a quote-unquote quarterback guru. He certainly maximizes the abilities of his quarterback. But, at the end of the day, I just don't see him being anything more than an 8-8 team because of their extremely difficult division. And I'm just not a Carson Palmer believer. If you would have talked to me, Brian, circa 2005, I would have told you that Carson Palmer was – future Hall of Famer, the next big thing in the NFL, just supremely talented. I mean, I think back then there wasn't a player that threw a prettier ball in the league than him. But, since
then
he had
that. Do you think that, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I don't want to forget to ask you this. Do you think that knee injury affected his career? Like, obviously, there's a before and after that knee injury, but do you think he just never came back from that knee injury and he just has always had happy feet since then? Or what do you think? Because I always thought like that was his problem. He never looked right as quarterback after.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly the catastrophic knee injury, I mean, that was ugly and, it cost him a year of development. And I'd also argue that, you know, back then the Bengals didn't have such great assistant coaches, and I've never been a starving Marvin Lewis fan. So I don't think he ever had the right, you know, it's almost like you wish that Bruce Arians could have came with a 25-year-old Carson Palmer, because they really could have, you know, done some beautiful things together. But more than the knee injury, you know, the one year he had to have, pretty sure, Tommy John surgery, which of course is famous for pitchers, not so much for football players.
Right.
He had to have that arm surgery, and I think ever since then he lost some zip on the ball, lost a little bit of touch, and I think the knee injury cost him some athleticism. I mean, he was never, you know, as nimble as, say, a Cam Newton or an Andrew Luck, but I mean, a guy could at least move around better, you know, pick up a third and six if there was a lot of field to work with, and you know, then he quickly became a Drew Bledsoe-like statue, which is fine when you can sling it like he used to be able to sling it. But he just, you know, I think at this point in his career, he has average arm strength at best. I mean, at least he plays in a dome that kind of hides it for him. And, you know, and he plays, you know, in a dome against St. Louis once a year, warm weather, stadium against San Francisco. You know, I think that kind of helps hide a little bit in his new division. But I'm just not a believer in the guy. I think that, on top of all of those things, it seemed like he kind of lost his passion for football as he was closing out with his career with the Bengals, where, and I'm not just saying that because he retired. It just didn't seem like, you know, he seems like a pretty thoughtful guy, and I think a part of him was ready just to move on. You know, I'll never forget the picture I saw right before the Raiders traded for him, where he was at a USC Trojan game, which is obviously his alma mater, and he's doing a keg stand. He was a retired NFL quarterback looking like a 19-year-old frat boy. And, you know, you think about NFL quarterbacks, and it's like, could you ever imagine Peyton Manning being in a position where he was doing a keg stand or Andrew Luck or Tom Brady? It's like, never. So I don't know if football was ever.
You know how much money I would pay for that picture of Tom Brady doing a keg stand right now? Not, you know,
oh, my God,
you,
that
you
would
know the Peyton
great.
Manning story. You know the Peyton Manning story, right? How he got accused of sexual harassment or whatever by that nurse because he mooned her or whatever. And he was in he would have been 18. I think he would have just gotten to Tennessee, 18 or 19. But yeah, he got but anyway, Peyton Manning in his, you know, early 30s, absolutely not, you know, obviously.
Absolutely,
but sorry,
not.
I just wanted to tell that story before I forgot.
I never heard of that. That's interesting. But
yeah.
You know, I feel like his interest kind of wavered in it, and I don't know if he ever went above and beyond to make sure the mental part. I think sometimes we assume he's just a smart quarterback when I don't really know that's true, because at some point in time you take enough hits, you can only blame it on the offensive line for so long. And, you know, he didn't work with the best later on in his career since the Raiders were obviously a mess when he was there.
Oh,
but
Hugh Jackson was definitely I think until he left, I actually think there was some promise there with
Carson
Palmer.
Oh, no doubt about it. But then he left, and you know, the wheels fell off. And,
yeah.
You know, at some point, though, it's like, you know, how many times is this guy going to get hit by the same blitz? How many times is he going to throw the ball in a double coverage? I mean, how many more years is he not going to see the safety roaming over here and he throws an interception that makes you hit the top of your forehead? And
yeah.
At this point in his career, when you're still making that many mistakes and turning the ball over that often, and you really don't bring that elite arm talent to the table anymore like you did in your younger days, I just think he's a middling option at best. The quarterback, and the only thing that's saving him, the saving grace that's separating him from being a clip holder right now, is being in a system with the Bruce Arians or being in a system with, you know, as you said, Hugh Jackson. So I just think that, yes, you're right individually. They have great talent. You know, I love Michael Floyd. I think he's a real nice breakout candidate, although I don't even know if you can call him a breakout candidate after his monster year last year. You know, Larry Fitz, the consummate professional. You know, Andre Ellington was one of my favorite backs in the draft 2 years ago from Clemson. You know, he's a big-time athletic talent. I really like their second-round pick this year, Troy Nicholas, the tight end from Notre Dame, one of the best all-around players in the draft, in my opinion. But I think their offensive line still has some question marks on it, and the quarterback has some question marks. When you play in the toughest division of football, and you have what I would say would be the, you know, maybe the worst quarterback in the division, I think that's a pretty tall uphill battle to climb. I mean, am I wrong about that, or of the four quarterbacks in the NFC West, who would you least want? I think for me, it would be Carson Palmer.
It's Carson Palmer, because there's guys that I've heard cornerbacks, quotes from cornerbacks saying that, man, if, just good things about Bradford. Like, the guy's a legit talent. He can't stay healthy. You know, he doesn't quite have the weapons. Now, I think that's not going to be a problem for him as far as the weapons go this year. So if Sam Bradford can put together with nice weapons like he has this year, then 16 games of healthy football, I think he is a better option than Carson Palmer. The only reason I would take Carson Palmer over him is because Sam Bradford is the, he's kind of turning into what we all thought Matthew Stafford was going to turn into, his first 2 years in the league. So he is a bit of a China doll. I mean, as far as, 16 games, I would definitely take Bradford over Palmer. So I think you're right. I think that he is less as far as that goes. But everything you said about their offense, I mean, Michael Floyd had a really good year last year. Larry Fitzgerald is Larry Fitzgerald, and we don't really need to say more. And, oh, I will let the listeners know real quick, when Brian says that he liked this guy coming out of the draft, I can vouch for that, because Colin Kaepernick was your dude coming out of that draft, by the way. You wanted the Bills to take him. Andre Ellington is another guy I remember you talking about, too, out of Clemson. So when Brian says that I like this guy coming out of the draft, Brian liked that guy coming out of the draft, because we all received multiple text messages about the guy that Brian's saying he liked. So just
thank
give
you,
everybody
Billy,
kind
I
of
appreciate
a heads up
that, and that's true. I was pissed that Denver took Monte Ball over Andre Ellington. That's
you
no
were. Yes, you were. Yeah, you're not over that. I think that I think we've spent sufficient time on the Arizona Cardinals, because I kind of want to get to the NFC North here. So while we have time, I think we have another about 35 minutes. So let's move on to the Green Bay Packers. Are they a legit Super Bowl contender this year?
This actually is the team that I'm picking to come out of the NFC.
Nice.
Which is kind of funny, because I think they've downgraded their offense a bit, but I just think that right now in 2014, if you were going to have one player for the entire season, who would you choose? And for me, it'd be Aaron Rodgers. I mean, the guy's a supremely gifted passer. He could still scramble and pick up first downs. He's smart as heck. I mean, I just think he's the best player in the league right now. And I thought they did a nice job upgrading the defense. You know, I think Julius Peppers in a new role and a new team might have a little career renaissance where he might get, sort of like what Sean Phillips was to the Broncos last year, 10 sacks, stepped in, wasn't asked to be the man, but, filled a nice role for him. So I think Peppers can do that for him. And I really like some of their other young talent on defense. Dayton Jones, who was a first-round pick out of UCLA 2 years ago, I could definitely see him taking, the next step in his progression. Hopefully Clay Matthews can stay healthy for a full year for him. Morgan Burnett had kind of a rough year last year, but I'm a believer. They have some solid corners led by, trying to blank on his name, but number 38. They have a decent enough defense where, it's sort of on Dom Capers now, and have to, fill up any patches that they have left and take this team, this defense at least, back to, at least an acceptable level where they're not costing the offense games. And then offensively, I mean, what more can we say about Rodgers? The guy's amazing. I do think they're going to miss James Jones, who was sort of Rodgers' go-to guy in the red zone. I mean, James Jones and Aaron Rodgers should do a training video or write a book on how to do the back shoulder fade instead of the five-yard line, because they were always on the same page with each other. And I also know that JerMichael Finley drives you nuts because he always disappointed in fantasy. But I do think they'll miss him, because even though he didn't have the stats, I do think he took up a lot of attention in the middle of the field from teams and to who they're going with now, where, whether it's Bostack, Crabtree, whoever, I do think that's a significant drop-off. Not anything that Aaron Rodgers can't cover up, of course, but I do think that's a drop-off. But, what sort of balances out the ledger is they really seem to have a nice ground game going with, I love Eddie Lacy. Had a terrific rookie year, looking to build off that. And even if he gets hurt, because, he's another guy, like you're saying, with as far as guys with injury concerns, yeah, my boy is James Starks, local Niagara County UB alum. And, I think he's one of the top number two backs in the NFL. I mean, they won a Super Bowl with them being their bell cow. So I'm going to go with Green Bay just because I think that Rodgers is really going to be getting hungry after a few years of playoff disappointments. He came back just in time for the playoffs last year. Really, technically won a playoff game as far as I'm concerned, that Week 17 thriller against the Bears. And then he almost beat San Francisco the following week. And, you know, this year I think the Packers return to their glory and get back to the Super Bowl.
You know what? I surely hope so because I'm a big Aaron Rodgers fan. I honestly think he's another guy, underratedly sort of, I wouldn't say unhealthy, but he definitely gets nicked up. But I think when it's all said and done, it wouldn't surprise me if he's not the greatest quarterback of all time. But that's just my opinion, and that's me, going out on kind of a, not a huge limb, but a limb. But yeah, Eddie Lacy, I think, added a dimension, kind of a toughness to that finesse offense that they've always had. I love watching that guy run. I thought he was, kind of what they needed. He was the Marshawn Lynch that, when Buffalo was presenting Marshawn Lynch, they did it in that game against the Packers. And I was like, man, Marshawn Lynch on that Packers team would be fantastic. I really hope that he leaves, he goes there, and for whatever reason they didn't, and they kind of got they kind of got Lacy, who I don't remember if he was was he statistically better at Alabama than Trent Richardson? Because I know you and I were huge on Trent Richardson when he was in college, but Eddie Lacy, so far it looks like he's going to be the better pro. Was he a better player at Alabama? I'm drawing a blank. You're more college football guy.
Well, I think they were both pretty dynamite. I mean, Lacy might have had some better rushing statistics, but he didn't. Even though he does actually have good hands, surprisingly, for a big guy, I would still say Trent was probably the better all-around player while at college. And I think a major reason why Eddie Lacy fell the second round was teams do have, medical concerns with his feet. And then he also had a concussion last year. So there are some injury question marks. But, as you pointed out, watching him run, his talent's indisputable. He really is a fantastic young running back. And, hopefully he can stay healthy for him.
Yeah, I hope so. And, I think he's going to be their key. Obviously, outside of Aaron Rodgers. He's going to be their key to getting back to the Super Bowl. All right, let's move on to the Detroit Lions. Now, do you think that this is a playoff team? I honestly don't, because I don't trust Matt Stafford yet. But you're higher on Stafford than I am. You say he's one of the guys that is worth that big kind of quarter of your salary cap deal. But just because of his age, what he can do, his arm talent. But a lot of times I just sort of see him kind of rely on Megatron, which obviously most quarterbacks would do if they had a guy like that, very obviously. But I'm just curious what he would be like without him. Where do you stand on Detroit?
Well, Bill, wouldn't you rely on Calvin Johnson, too, if Chris Durham was your starting second wide receiver for a long portion of the year last year?
That's a very fair point. But, yeah, I understand why he does. I'm just saying, I'm not sure if he's, the quarterback he is without him. I don't know if he could be the Peyton Manning with limited arm strength, guy we saw his first year in Denver. Obviously, Demaryius Thomas is a different animal. But what I mean is, could he pick teams apart using, like Tom Brady in that 2004, where, David Gibbons was his best receiver?
Right. Yeah, I think he can be. I'm a huge, huge believer in Stafford. I think he's one of the best 7, 8, 9 quarterbacks in the NFL. I mean, some of the throws that the guy makes are just unbelievable. And, he's even better than Jay Cutler as far as, throwing a ball off his back foot or having just awful mechanics and yet still having the arm strength to, put in a tight spot and get it deep down the field. I mean, if you're a dome team like they are with a big weapon like Calvin Johnson, I can't think of, too many quarterbacks I would want, at the controls more than him. And I think we forget how young he is. I think he's only 25, 26, 27 at the most. you know, I think he still has, you know, some maturation to do from the mental aspect. And I think if he can ever find the perfect balance between, you know, maybe studying a little bit more and not relying so much on those physical tools, you know, sort of using his brain a little bit more than just saying, you know, that's a tight window, but I might have the best arm in the league, so I'm going to throw it, to, you know, maybe it wouldn't be such a bad idea to check it down here. I think if we can find that balance, which, you know, we've seen quarterbacks like that do as they age, then I think he's going to be absolutely dynamite. And, you know, I personally do think that's a playoff-worthy roster. What I don't think they have, though, is a playoff-worthy head coach. I mean, my jaw just dropped to the floor when they made Jim Caldwell the head coach. I mean, did you watch the Ravens' offense last year? They were pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. Did you watch what happened when Peyton Manning didn't play? Like, I understand that it's a big drop-off to Curtis Painter, but after seeing even the Bills last year, just as a quick example, you know, they got Thaddeus Lewis in the fourth week of the preseason, and they got Jeff Toole, an undrafted free agent, who I think absolutely stinks. And the team was at least competitive and nearly beat two playoff teams in the Bengals and the Chiefs. You know, they lost one game in overtime, and the other one they had, they're marching in to go up 17, and then an interception almost returned for a touchdown. But that's a whole different story. My point is that we see other teams lose their quarterbacks, but the entire wheels don't fall off. And, I mean, I'm not saying it's Jim Caldwell's fault that they won 1-15, but the way they won 1-15, where they were just getting shellacked week in and week out, at some point, I feel like the coach, you have to put some of that blame on the coach. So I'm not really sure if he's the guy to lead them to that promised land or take them to the next level. But I think a team of Matt Stafford, Calvin Johnson, you know, they take Eric Ebron in the first round to give him another, you know, now if you want to put two guys on Calvin inside the 10-yard line, well, all right, we'll put Eric Ebron out wide on the opposite side and throw him a jump ball. I mean, he's a freakish athlete. Golden Tate, I think, is really going to take off going from a run-first system in Seattle to going to Detroit with a big rocket arm quarterback and, a pass-happy team. I think his run after the catch ability is terrific. I could see him, you know, he's not going to tear up the statue, but I could see him having a real good, solid season as their number two receiver. And then some of their young talent I like a lot, too. As far as on the defensive side of the ball, Nick Fairley's playing for a new contract. They declined his fifth-year option, and I think you're going to see a man that's finally motivated, and I think he's going to have a monster season. I really do. Ndamukong Suh, you know, he's a mechanical personality, but I think the talent's undeniable. And then Ziggy Ansah, guy was rawer than a steak coming out, or uncooked steak coming out of BYU. I mean, barely played football until his senior year of college. And yet I thought he had a real solid rookie season, and he certainly seems like he's another building block on, you know, I guess the theme of tonight is talented young defensive lines. I mean, that's three top 15, actually top 10 picks right there. So yeah. I do think that they have the goods. They got a good linebacking core, but much like my qualms with the 49ers, I have to question their the back end of the team. I think that, for as long as I can remember, so in the Jim Schwartz era, the corners were the Achilles heel of the team, and I still think that's probably true, although if Jim Caldwell's bringing in that ancient Tampa 2 Tony Dungy system that they ran with the Colts, you know, that is a good system to hide poor cornerback play. But I think they're a playoff-worthy roster, but I don't know if the coach, the guy calling the shots, is going to be the guy that leads them back to the postseason.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said, man. I wish I had some kind of debate so we could make this more compelling, but, I mean, everything you said is spot on. I mean, they're trotting Rasheed Mathis out there. What? Rasheed Mathis is – I thought he was still in the Jaguars or retired. But, yeah, man, I loved everything I saw out of Ansah. I mean, that guy, what a good story. He led the team in sacks last year played 14 games. He doesn't know how to play football yet. I mean, this is all the stuff everybody was saying about Jason Pierre-Paul in 2010, and then he went out and had a monster second year, and obviously, you know, we're not going to get into Jason Pierre-Paul this week, but this is a lot of what I heard about Jason Pierre-Paul as a Giants fan. This is what you're hearing about Ziggy Ansah, and I think Ziggy Ansah might be a better athlete, and it's just kind of insane that this guy, you know, learned football 3 years ago and has 8 sacks in the NFL as a rookie, not really knowing what he's doing. So, man, once that guy puts it all together, he's going to be an absolute force. And I think that once his defense, all right, Ndamukong Suh to me is, I don't understand how he gets paid what he gets paid. Not that he's not a great player, but the fact that he's, you know, probably going to get $40-plus million guaranteed is kind of amazing to me, because I don't know if he's the best defensive tackle in the league. What do you think about that? Would you call him the best defensive tackle in the league? I wouldn't.
I would not, but I'd say that, you know, guys like him and Sam Bradford should just be sending thank you letters to the old CBA where it was set up where there wasn't a rookie salary cap. And so...
Yeah.
It's like, all right, well, you're already paying me $20 million a year, and, you know, even if I'm not the best defensive tackle, I'm still a pro bowler. I'm still one of the best in my position. Like, I might be amenable to a little bit of an annual pay cut, but not much, you know what I mean? So I feel like
right.
the Lions don't really have a lot of leverage where, you know, in a new CBA where a D tackle in that same position might only be making $4 million, now it's like, we'll give you $12 million a year, and you're like, all right, that sounds solid, but... I just can't see a guy that productive going from that high of a pay cut. And, again, I mean, that's because of the way the old CBA was set up, where basically if you had a top-five pick, that top-five pick was almost assuredly going to become your highest-paid player on your roster that year. But
yeah,
I think he's a top-ten D-tackle, but, you know, he has his mental lapses. And for a guy that seems so ferocious and violent, you know, sometimes he just seems to be in a funk out there, but... He draws up a lot of attention. He's always getting doubled and chipped, and, you know, the offense is always paying attention to him. That's why I really think that Nick Fairley, who seems like, if there's ever a guy that seems to be destined to be the dummy that finally turned it on because it was a contract year and finally whipped himself into shape and gave it his all, I mean, that seems like Nick Fairley to a T, because he sort of did that at Auburn,
right.
where he was nothing more than a afterthought and a practice player. Then it's like, all right, you're draft eligible this year, and, you know, he went off and might have been the best player in college football that year other than his teammate Cam Newton. So I think that Fairley's going to have a monster year. Seeing a lot of single teams with Sue and Ansa taking up some attention. And, you know, all in all, would I want to pay Sue that much money? No, but if I'm Sue's agent, I'm not taking too much of a pay cut either.
Okay. All right, Minnesota. All right, the word is that Bridgewater has been inconsistent in practice, but, you know, we've all known. I mean, this is such a silly thing, but he looked bad. He had a bad workout, and, like, that was a big red flag for teams. Maybe this is a guy that's just, like Johnny Manziel claimed, maybe this is just a guy that's better at games, that sees the game, you know, differently when the lights are on him. And And that, I don't know. I mean, I didn't watch the Minnesota preseason game. How did he look, if you saw it, or if you saw any highlights or anything?
I haven't seen it yet, but to quote my man Allen Iverson, we're talking about practice. And
yeah.
As somebody that loves the NFL, can't get enough of it, we'll watch, you know, any sort of competitive football possible, whether it's preseason, training camp, NFL or College Senior Bowl, East-West Shrine Game,
right.
whatever. It just is so annoying to me, the amount of coverage the training camp gets. I mean, just the local coverage of, well, E.J. Manuel didn't hit all of his passes today. Like, shut up. I mean, he might look inconsistent to the reporters, but what we don't know is what they're actually working on with them. They might, you know, I always make the analogy to baseball, but, you know, in baseball, they might tell a starting pitcher, look, it's spring training. Who cares what your stats are? We want you to work on your fastball command. Don't throw anything other than fastballs. Well, guess what? Major league hitters are eventually going to realize you're only throwing fastballs. They're going to time you up and hit you. But guess what? The important part is that you're developing on your weakness and you're working for when the games actually matter. And I feel like it's the same thing in training camp with quarterbacks, especially young guys, where they might say, look, we don't care if you throw an interception. But trust your eyes and make a quick decision. If it's wrong, we'll look at the film and correct it. And then, of course, you get all the
right.
reporters who think they know what they're talking about. And it just, I cannot believe how serious people take training camp reports when you can't make an honest, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, you can't make an assertion about a player unless you unless you get to take a look at the film either. Like, all right, well, Teddy threw interception. All right, well, you know, do we know the receiver ran the right route? Do we know that the corner didn't just know the play from practicing against him every play? But, you know, an opposing corner is not going to know that. He's not going to, you know, he might fall for the play action fake, or he might fall for the double move, et cetera, et cetera. Like, there's just so many variables at play that anybody that, you know, takes bases their opinion on someone off training camp practices, it's just absolutely insane to me. So I couldn't care less how Teddy Bridgewater's looked in training camp. I couldn't care less how he looked at his pro day. What I know is the dude was an absolute baller at Louisville, and I still only have one qualm about him and one worry about him, and that's that he's built like Leolis McKelvin, who's one of the skinniest human beings I've ever seen, and durability. That's my only question with him. But as far as I'm concerned, without question, I mean, Christian Ponder, I don't even know what he's still doing on an NFL roster. Matt Castle is the perfect clipboard holder to me because I know that, you know, if I need to put in my backup, at least I know he's going to know the system and not kill us. But other than that, I just don't see how this is anything other than Teddy Bridgewater's show come week one.
Right, I agree with you. And you know what? You brought, that's a fantastic, fantastic point, even though I'm kind of a I'm kind of a sucker for that stuff too. But you're right, because he's learning, he's basically in a system that kind of exploits his weaknesses, the North Turner system. He's an up-the-field offensive coordinator. And Teddy Bridgewater's strengths are short to intermediate throws, where he's not a good deep ball thrower. So maybe that's what they watch. They watch a bunch of him throwing deep, missing guys, maybe throwing interceptions. But like you pointed out, that's probably a good thing because they're telling him, trust his eyes. All right, you're learning a system that is not conducive to your strengths, but we drafted you. We trust you enough to be able to learn how to play in the Norv Turner system. So, yeah, that's probably a lot of what they saw. And I think as you were talking, I'm like, yeah, you know what, Brian's probably right. This is probably what happened. And I also think, like, I think you pointed out in our drafting, this guy went against the Florida defense and picked him apart that had, what, 8 future NFL players on it as a sophomore? Like,
and high picks, too. And the guy got hit in the mouth and got back up. And you know what, too, come regular season, when you're actually playing the real games and it's not just practice, North Turner spending the entire week game planning, and they're going to say, look, this number 2 corner, he's not going to be able to stay with Craig Jennings or Cordarrelle Patterson. We're going to attack the crap out of him and have all these special plays designed to exploit that weakness. In training camp, you're not doing that. You're going up against the other team, and you're just practicing your base plays. Like, I just can't believe how many people draw conclusions from these things. Like, it's just, all it is just a simulation to get you in the motions, to get you ready for the actual games.
Right.
And
right.
I mean, to think that he's looked, you know, only okay. I mean, I couldn't care less. I don't think any rookie quarterback's probably ever looked great at training camp. You know what I mean?
Jamarcus Russell did. All right, yeah. Why? Well, you know what? Good for Christian Ponder, though, by the way. His wife now, Samantha Ponder, quite stunning. He had a girlfriend in college that might have been better looking than Samantha Steele. So good for him. Other than that, I have no opinions about Christian Ponder. He's garbage. You said he was going to be garbage. You hated his performance. You thought it was an absolute travesty that he won the MVP of the Senior Bowl. You called that a disgrace. I forget who you liked in that Senior Bowl, though. You were said maybe it was a receiver or somebody, but you said it was like nuts and should have won it, but I forget who. But yeah, I mean, this team is Adrian Peterson. How do we think Adrian Peterson is going to hit that running back wall this year, or no? He's 29.
I'd say no. I think he still has at least 2 good years left in him. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, still all about Adrian Peterson. He's going to set up the whole offense. And, you know, and now they finally have some other weapons around him that kind of suit their strengths.
But love Cordarrelle Patterson, by the way.
Right. And Teddy Bridgewater was a great play-action quarterback at Louisville. So you run the ball out with Adrian Peterson. The idea then is you free up Cordarrelle Patterson. And what's his specialty? Running fast in a straight line. You know, so I feel like there's not too many situational deep threats better than him, even if he's still raw as a route runner. So, you know, I feel like that's real nice. I think Kyle Rudolph, you know, everybody knows Norv Turner gets the most out of his tight ends. And, you know, Rudolph's a guy of, like, dating back to his Notre Dame days. So I feel like he's going to have a nice year for him. You know, Greg Jennings isn't the player he once was, but he can still be that savvy veteran number two receiver that moves the chains, doesn't get many big plays. But, you know, there's a lot of plays that he was open with last year, and the quarterback's just going to get him the ball. So I think they have some nice weapons on offense, a big offensive line. And then a guy that I absolutely love, and I'm pretty sure you love as well, too. You know, they got my man Zim running the show over there now. Like,
if the Detroit Lions would have just
went out and got Zim, I would have said to our previous talk, that team's a 12-4 squad and a guaranteed playoff team. But then they got Jim Caldwell for God knows why.
Oh, my God.
Zim is going to make that team tough. You know, they went out, signed, who's the defensive end they got? I'm drawing a blank, but, you know, they went out, signed some free agents. That defense is going to be fantastic. He's going to love Harrison Smith and Xavier Rhodes. You know, they had a lot of high picks on that side of the ball, too. The Sharif Floyd. They got a lot of young talent that
they
don't really talk about because they stink. But, you know, I think that they'll be much improved, but I don't see them being anything more than
Linval Joseph,
10,
the Giants. How did I forget that? Yeah. They got Linval Joseph from the Giants, who actually just got shot, but should be fine. I agree with you. Mike Zimmer was my favorite part of the Bengals Hard Knock. I love that guy. I was ready to punch a hole in my wall for him. He looked at the screen and was like, Bill, I need you to go run through your living room wall. I'd have been like, absolutely, and just dove through it. Like, I love Zimmer, dude. He was my favorite guy in that entire season. And Jim Caldwell he's charisma-free. These redraft coach hirings, I don't understand them. I just don't get it. We see it in the NBA all the time, too. They're the worst about it, but that league. But I can't understand these Jim Caldwell hirings. Like, I don't understand it. He's not a proven winner. You and I could have coached the Colts with Peyton Manning. Wasn't Tom Moore the de facto head coach of that team, those teams anyway? Like, I never seen Tony Dungy or Jim Caldwell, which Tony Dungy might be the most overrated coach in the league or of all time in any sport. But that's another conversation for another day. I've never seen either of them hold a laminate or a clipboard or anything. I don't even know why they have headsets on when Peyton Manning was running that team. It was Tom Moore and Peyton Manning talking the whole time. So, I mean, back in Minnesota, they're a rebuilding team, but I definitely think they're trending up. I don't know, man. It's just not a good team outside of Adrian Peterson, but I'm really excited to see Teddy Bridgewater. I think it would be a mistake not to just start him week one, let him take his lumps, because he's clearly a guy that has mental toughness to be able to handle it. So definitely not a playoff team, but trending up. Would you agree?
I would certainly say so, yes.
All right, and we're going to close out on the Chicago Bears. Very few human beings on the planet know more about Jay Cutler than you. If I'm thinking about this correctly, you would call yourself a Jay Cutler expert due to his time spent in Denver, would you not?
I would say so, yes.
All right, and was he worth that contract he got?
Yes.
Okay, because
simple supply and demand for me.
I was going to say, actually. I was like, because there's only a handful of guys that are starting NFL quarterbacks.
Right, and some of the throws he makes will make you want to go insane where, you know, he throws off his back foot. You know, that Thursday night game a few years ago against the 49ers where he threw four interceptions, and you're like, what is wrong with this guy? But I was watching some of the preseason game the other night, and he threw this back shoulder fade that there's probably about three quarterbacks that the announcer pointed out that would even have the audacity to even try that throw,
right.
And that Cutler put it right on a rope. And I think the guy's fantastic, and I don't think there's two or three quarterbacks more talented than him in the NFL. I mean, he's got the big arm. He's got some underrated mobility. He's big. I mean, he's got everything you look for in a quarterback. You know, the thing that's always held him back was, you know, his personality, his lack of leadership, his lack of game awareness, is almost just unconscionable decision making, where it's like not only would he make a bad decision, but he just looks so, it happens, just so apathetic out there. And I feel like that's kind of improved over the last few years, especially last year under Coach Mark Trestman, who I'm just a huge believer in, not only as a coach, but as a man. And I think that was the match made in heaven for Cutler. I think between that and getting married kind of matured him a bit. And I think we're going to see Jay Cutler's best season since Mike Shanahan was his coach this year. I really do.
Right. And, I mean, he has no excuse, with his weapons. I mean, not that, he's ever been a terrible quarterback, but it's really hard to find a better pair of receivers than Alshon Jeffrey and Brandon Marshall. And, let's shoehorn Marty Bennett and Matt Forte in there, too. Those are four really, really good pass catchers that he has at his disposal. You and I were absolutely in love with Alshon Jeffrey, by the way, at South Carolina. Absolutely in love. Then, obviously the combine hurt him a little bit. Who else it hurt? Anquan Boldin. That guy seemed to have a pretty good career. Alshon Jeffrey just absolutely lit the league up. He also knocked me out of the Fantasy Football League playoffs last year by that insane throw and catch against Dallas. But I'm over it. But Matt Forte, man, this guy, he's just a model of consistency. He catches the ball in the backfield. I'm looking at his stats. He had 74 catches, 594 yards, and 3 receiving touchdowns, and also ran for 1,339 yards, 9 touchdowns, and averaged 4.6 yards a carry, and fumbled twice. 4 times total, if you include 4 fumbles total, rushing and catching. So, I mean, that offense is just going to be one of the better ones in the league. And when you think about Chicago, you necessarily don't think about their offense. But I mean, they're going to have one of the top offenses in the league this year, and they're going to be pretty exciting on both sides of the ball. And you know what? This could be the team that challenges Green Bay in the NFC North. I don't think they're going to get there, but I definitely like them.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all if it came down to how it did last year with that Week 17. It was just an absolutely thrilling game where, like I said, it was essentially a playoff game for the right to go to the playoffs. And I agree. I do think that's probably going to be, the Packers' biggest hurdle to winning the NFC North. And more than that, based upon what the Bears did this offseason as far as, being proactive in free agency, they signed the DM Houston from Oakland, for example. They went out and, they had a real nice draft. I mean, they made moves that signaled we're in it to win now. They're in total win now mode. The first-round pick, Kyle Fuller, seems to really bring some attitude to that defense. A terrific corner that they're going to need when they play Randall Cobb and the Green Bay Packers, so that play doesn't happen again last year where, Rodgers hit him for the 50-yarder in Week 17 to change the whole complexion of the game. And
right.
I think he's going to bring some swagger to that team, too. In fact, he already got in a fight with Martellus Bennett, and, Martellus Bennett got, suspended indefinitely from the team, which is a good lesson, folks. If you're ever going to pick a fight with someone on the field, make sure it isn't the player that the team just took in the first round 2 months ago, you know what I mean?
Right,
stay away
from
the guy's possession. So, I feel like that's going to – how the new guys on defense gel is going to be – side for me, how far that team goes. Because right now, heading into the offseason, I thought that was one of the worst defensive units in football last year. So they can
right.
at least get the middle of the pack, the average, with Mark Trestman and the aforementioned weapons that you mentioned, then that's going to be a playoff caliber squad for sure. So to me, it all depends on how much better that defense can get in one offseason, how the new pickups can help, fill some gaping holes. And if they can, I mean, watch out for that team for sure.
No, couldn't agree more. So, Brian, we got like a minute left of you. What's your wins for Seattle? I think it's over under 11.
I'm going to go 12.
Okay. San Francisco.
I'm going to go 13.
All right. St. Louis.
Oh, that's tough. I'm going to go 9.
All right, and Arizona.
7.
Okay. And, all right, I'm going to go, oh, man, I almost agree with you on all these. Seattle, I'm going to go 13. 13 for San Francisco. I'm going to go 8 for St. Louis, and I'm going to go 8 for Arizona. All right, Green Bay.
Green Bay, I'm going to go 12.
Me as well. Minnesota?
Minnesota, I'm going to go 7.
Ooh, 7. I'm going 4. You know what? I'll give them the Zimmerman. I'll go 6. All right, Chicago?
Zim's stare alone will scare the players on getting a few wins.
Very good point.
Chicago, I'm going to go 10.
Chicago, I'm going 11. And Detroit?
9.
That was mine, too. Okay. All right, man. I am tallying all these so we know where we're at and see how close we get at the end of the season. But yeah, man, that's our show for I'm gonna let you go, Brian, because I know you had a hard out at 8:45, so I'm going to let you go and then give up some Facebook addresses and Twitters and all that fun stuff. So, but all right, man, good talking to you, and look forward to our fantasy draft at the end of the month, and look forward to hitting up some Bills games. And you know what? If there's any local prospects, Brian, we need to hit some of the high schools. We missed Tyrone Wheatley's kids last year. So if there's any,
sure,
we got to hit up
a
UVP.
No
All
doubt
right,
about
buddy.
That, for sure, brother. All right, thanks, bro.
All right, man. Have a good day.
See you.
Good night. Bye. All right, and for your listeners out there that are still listening to us, go ahead and tell a friend. Go ahead and follow me on Facebook, just Bill Kegel. Brian Shipley is Brian Shipley. Twitter, you can tweet or follow me at Bill Kegel. Follow Mike. Mike is still part of the show. He just, this is a bad day for him. So at Mike Pazeski, BSP. Also find us on backsportspage.com and follow them on Twitter at backsportspage. Thanks for listening. Have a good day.